Welcome to Total Wealth Academy's GetTotalWealth.com radio show, where wealth includes much more than just money. It includes family, fitness, romance, travel, charity, and all the other parts of a balanced life. Listen and learn how 70% of the millionaires in America made their money and were able to lead more balanced lives using real estate. Now, your host, real estate investor and consultant, Steve Davis.
Good afternoon and welcome to the GetTotalWealth.com radio show. I am your host, Steve Davis, where we're here together working to improve our financial IQ. Total Wealth Academy is a coaching program for real estate investors. We take people who have never owned a piece of real estate before, and I've seen some of them go all the way to 5,000 units. And some people join, they already have 5,000 units. They just want to be around like-minded people and maybe take their business to the next level. And in a nutshell, what we're doing is simply studying successful people, finding out what they do differently from the poor and middle class, and just imitating them. And one of the things we're hitting hard right now is studying this concept of the effort minimizing brain. And I think you need to understand that it's also risk that your brain minimizes too. That it should really be called the effort / risk minimizing brain, and how it keeps you from taking action. So we've been focusing a lot on that. I'm not going to spend too much time on that today. I do want to talk about the Zillow fiasco where their business model failed. If you're not familiar with this, they started buying houses to rent out. They started buying houses to flip. And say 3-4 weeks ago, they stopped buying houses at all. Then about 2 weeks ago, they started selling their supposed flip properties at a loss. And a lot of people are going, well, is this a sign that the correction is occurring? And I think that it probably is, but it still doesn't say when it's really going to hit. It's one of those things that it's occurred, it's a little nerve-wracking, but it still doesn't tell you much, except that they were unable to mark those things up. I think Zillow's strategy was, hey, we're going to buy these houses, rehab them, pretty much at full price, but prices are going up so fast that we can hold them for 6 months or a year and sell at a profit. I think they recognize that that is speculation, not investing. Speculation is buy low to sell high. It's a form of gambling. So they are wise, in my opinion, to back out of that business model. It wasn't a good business model to begin with. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the market's crashing. It means that they didn't know what they were doing. They goofed it up. They're admitting it and stopping doing it. Let's go to the phone lines real quick and we'll come. Wait a minute. I've got a guest coming on. I'm actually going to wait until after the first break to bring on my guest. But I want you to really stay tuned. This is a very interesting guy. Bill Pilkington is his name. He's a CPA, and he is, how do I put this? Because I don't want this to come across negative. In fact, I mean it in a very positive way. I call them rabbit chasers. And what they do is they get talking about something and then they realize, hey, you're not going to understand what I'm saying if I don't explain this too. To me, that is a very valuable trait. So he's chasing that rabbit, trying to help us understand everything, which you can't do. when it comes to taxes. I don't know if you've seen that picture of the senator standing beside the tax code. It's a book sitting on the floor, and it's taller than him. You know, it's like 500,000 pages or something, just some insane amount of tax code in the United States. And I'm always talking about, you know, savers or losers. You're going to fail if you try to save your way to retirement. It's a bad idea. You need to focus on making more money. One of the characteristics of savers is they spend massive amounts of time trying to save taxes. They spend massive amounts of time cutting coupons. They drive across town to save a dollar on a pound of tomatoes. And by the way, coupon cutters, people who drive across town to save a dollar on a pound of tomatoes, you know that the average quote-unquote couponer saves 200 bucks a month. You think you're going to retire on 200 bucks a month? You're not. So it's basically a wasted effort. So anyway, my sales pitch is spend 95% of your time making more money. Put the coupons down and go read a book on how to make a second stream of income. One of my favorite situations was a former IRS agent who had 120 plus houses was standing in front of a group of people, and he was talking about building his portfolio and all the cash flow he had and the wealth that he had and how to do it. Well, this guy kept interrupting him and asking him questions about taxes. Finally, the speaker looked at the guy and goes, "Look, how much did you pay in taxes last year?" And the guy proudly said, "I paid $30,000 in taxes last year." He goes, "Look, you don't have a tax problem. You got an income problem. You don't make any money. That's why that $30,000 seems like a lot to you." That woke me up. And I was like, man, that is the truth. And that's why I have a goal of writing a $1 million check to the IRS 1 year. That's my goal. That means I made what? 2 to 3 million. So focus on 95% of your time. 95% of your time should be on making more money, and 5% or less on saving it. You know, getting discounts and chasing coupons and stuff like that, and keeping your taxes low. Now, why do I say just 5%? Because you can't master the tax code. It's 6 feet tall. 6 feet of pages. That's why you need somebody like Bill, who's coming on in the next segment, on your team. He does that. And you should be doing what? Focusing on making more money and telling Bill how much you made, and then let him figure out how to pay the lowest taxes possible. You can't master that code. It'd be a waste of your time to figure out how to save taxes. Wiki, you can just hire somebody like Bill and he'll take care of it. We'll talk more about that when we come back from the break here on the GetTotalWealth.com radio show. I am your host, Steve Davis. Thank you so much for listening.
Do you dream of a better life for you and your family? Do you want more time with the family? Would you like to be less dependent on a job for your income? Would you like to travel more? The solution is simple. Build a second stream of income. We can show you how. We are offering a free 2-hour sample class on how to use real estate to build a second stream of income for you and your family. To reserve a seat, visit gettotalwealth.com and click on the free class button at the top of the page. That's gettotalwealth.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to the GetTotalWealth.com radio show. I am your host, Steve Davis. I'm going to go ahead and bring Bill on. Bill Pilkington is a CPA, super fun guy to listen to, has great ideas, and he's willing to share them. So, Bill, thanks a lot for calling in. How are you today?
Hey, I'm good, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Let's do one thing straight out of the blocks. I emailed you to get your website, and I don't have my email in front of me. that email in front of me. Let's get your website out so people can go there and kind of see your business and while you're talking.
Sure. So it's Bentley, like the car, BentleyAssoc.com. So, you know, the www.BentleyAssoc.com.
Excellent. BentleyAssociates.com.
A-S-S-O-C. Probably one of the few times you'll see me wearing a suit and tie to it.
Okay. Well, I enjoyed talking with you yesterday, and I was, you may have heard it while you were on hold, but I like the way, I call it chasing rabbits, because you have to go in multiple directions, you know, sometimes instantly to be able to catch one. But I asked you a question, and then you shared three or four other ideas that I didn't even know I needed to understand that answer. So what I'd like to do, I'm going to ask you some leading questions, and then you just go with it. Be yourself. Sure. And share whatever ideas you've got. But one of the big things among the members, they're passive investors. They're putting up, say, 50, 100, 250 grand into a passive deal. Then they're getting a cash flow of 7, 8%. Their internal rate of return, 17 to 22%. But let's deal with the cash flow right now, because that's the one where people have the most questions. How does that get accounted for on the K-1? And then when they sell, take it all the way to the sale and how they're going to be taxed.
Okay, cool. So the way it kind of works, so you're buying in, typically buying into multifamily, single family pretty much works the same way. But there's taxes and there's cash flow, and they're not going to be the same thing. So the IRS has different ways to take expenses. So you might especially like see like a large loss the first year, just because the IRS basically says, hey, you want to take all these deductions this first year, or do you want to spread them out over 27 years? That's just the way you take the deduction, but it really doesn't talk about the cash flow. So you're getting that. Now, as a passive, that probably, even though it may show a loss, you're not going to see it on page one or two of your tax return. It's going to be buried in the back, like page 9, page 10. It's kind of sitting there in the back to help you out one day. This kind of says like working out at the gym. People, they think, you know, you're going to go work at the gym. You know, you work out there one day, and it's not like you're going to also, you know, get these big buff muscles, you know, and be all trim. It takes a little while. The more you go, the longer you go, you'll start to see some of the benefit. You know, you see a muscle pop out here, start to see some of your ribs, your six-pack. And so what happens is that's kind of like the cash flow. You're getting cash flow along the way, but in the background, you're building up these passive losses so that as you're getting the cash flow, you're not paying tax this year. You're not paying tax next year. You're not going to see like, okay, now I get to offset all my W-2 income. I get to offset all this stuff. You know, I bought into one deal on one house, and so now I have, you know, pay zero tax. It's not, you're not buying it for that. What you're buying for is, hey, okay, cool. I'm going to get my cash flow, and then I'm going to keep track of all these losses. And then when I sell, I'll then be able to use the losses from this to offset my gains. And maybe those losses overshadow the gains. Maybe they're less than the gains. But the cool thing is those losses, you'll be able to use to offset against your ordinary income. And the gains, the IRS doesn't make it easy, but they are not always taxed the same way. Some of those gains could be preferential gains, meaning you put $50,000 in, and when you sell out, you get more than your $50,000. Those gains might be anywhere from 0, 15 to 20% tax. So it's kind of possible almost to get like an arbitrage. That's when you really start to see the benefit of it. Mm-hmm. If the year you sell, and that's an inside sell, you may, you know, just keep punting down the road forever, but you might buy into another deal, or you might buy another single family property. You get into some more passive deals. As long as you're doing it in the same calendar year, you can use the loss from, like, maybe you have a big gain in January, and then you're like, hey, what do I want to do? You know, some of those kind of like want to take the money and walk away, which is all good. But other ones are like, hey, you know what? I like this real estate deal. Let me get into something else. They buy another one, and they, as long as they close before the end of December, they can actually use the losses from deal number two to offset their gains from number one. So I don't like to always say it's like tax-free, but it's very tax-preferred. And So in the meantime, it's like, yep, keep collecting those checks, keep getting those cash flow, and it's just using the code to your advantage. And then also what we'll like to do is say more than just the deal you're in. It's like, okay, well, what else are you doing? You know, what else are you spending money on? I mean, let's make sure we're not leaving any money on the table. Even though in the current year, maybe we've got extra expenses, we've got extra deductions that aren't going to help you in the current year, they're going to make for a much softer landing when you do eventually sell. And also, as we're building up these losses along the way, say you just start having profits. Well, until you get all your money back, until you get all your losses recovered, you're still not paying any taxes. So it's a time value of money. I guess that's the way I explain it.
Wow. So one of those expenses could be your consulting fee. Let's say somebody wants to buy a 200 unit. They pay me $20,000 to take some classes and for me to consult them. How do they write that off?
Yeah, so if they're either in the single family or in the multifamily, it's kind of like, but for the fact that you do these investments, would you even have this expense? And so it's like, yeah, I got to pay this because this is what I need to do in order to be these investments. You're then going to spread them out. You might either spread them out over your single family, you might spread them over your multifamily. In the multifamily, what you're doing is because you're a member of this LLC, and the LLC is not usually going to be taxed as a partnership. So if these LLCs are corporations, as corporations, those rules are different, but let's just go with the LLC taxed as a partnership. Well, you have unreimbursed partnership expenses. Meaning, hey, I'm a partner in this partnership, and I'm having to pay these things out of my own pocket to be in here. I'm having to pay for these things. So let's make sure that we get the maximum benefit from the tax code on it. But in order to get that, I mean, I've seen a lot of omagunas, meaning, yeah, I'm going to invest, I'm going to buy into this partnership, or I'm going to buy this house. But if they're paying for the training, which is great training, but if you don't move forward and actually buy something, it's like, okay, all you do is just have a bunch of, you know, personal entertainment, basically, so there's nowhere to write it off. Because when you're buying in these deals, you're forming a business. You're actually now creating a business. The IRS has said, yeah, as long as you're going into, you're not supposed to go in for a profit. I have no idea of anybody who actually spends money thinking, I can't wait to lose money on this thing. It's like, okay, I'm totally want to go for a profit. Maybe not this year, but I'm thinking long term. It's like, yeah, of course I'm putting this money in to go for a profit. And so therefore, I'm spending this money to make more profit. And whether you own it as individual or you maybe create your own LLC and then that LLC owns the other thing, it still stays on the same basis. But, you know, some people, though, they think, oh, well, if I form this LLC, then the LLC then owns my passive investments. That makes it not passive, right? And it's like, no. Somebody's probably giving me bad advice. You know, and I'm going, well, my buddy's CPA said he does that, and they can take all these write-offs, and they beat a year against his income. I'm like, yeah, my friend gets $120 down the freeway, and I never got a ticket, but they beat me it right.
It just didn't get caught.
Correct. So there's totally legal ways that you're able to take these expenses. They're legitimate business expenses, meaning you're allowed to be a self-employed person. You're allowed to be an investor. You're allowed to be a passive member in these other multifamily deals or owning them individually. And now if you're having to spend your own money in order to be a part of this investment, in order to be part of this group, in order to do things, well, those are legitimate business expenses. Now, that doesn't mean, me and my wife, we went out to dinner and we talked about business, so we can write that off, right? No, you know, that's not what we're talking about. Or, you know, I was driving around in my car and I thought about real estate and I saw some, you know, sign, so I can write those business miles off, or, you know, I stuck a sign on the side of my car, so now my car is completely deductible. No, we're not talking about that. It's, you know, I kind of go like, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. What do you have to spend in order to be better in this investment? What are the real legitimate expenses? And it's kind of like a good way I say it's like, imagine you had an employee and they turned in their expense report. Now, you own the company, you earned the money, and you've got an employee now that has spent money. What are you willing to reimburse them for that they've done to help make your business better? And so think about it that way. What have you spent money on in this real estate in order to be better? You know, what would you feel comfortable turning in as an expense report to your boss and feel comfortable turning it in.
Wow, that's now a really you're really interesting way to look at it.
Understanding what type of expenses are going to be legitimate.
Yeah, the way I've been saying it is you can write off my consulting fees the year you do your first deal. But if they pay them in 2021 and they don't do a deal till 2022, they can't write that off in 2021, right?
No, because there's nothing to go against. You have to have some kind of business to offset. You can't just have an idea that's like, you know, if you were to look at it and it's like, okay, fine, you pay these consulting fees. What partnership were you a partner in? Okay, what entities were you spending this money on? And it's just one of those, well, you were planning on doing it, but it's kind of like, okay, you know, that's great, you were doing planning, but unfortunately, that's not going to happen. Now, say you buy some membership, though, and it's good for 1 year or for 2 years. So then you've got something, hey, this is worth 24 months. Maybe in 2021, the first 4 months, I got zero benefit for, but because it's continued on for the next year, hey, now I can use 12 months out of my thing to use in 2022. Again, assuming you actually buy something into 2022. But it's kind of one of those, you know, you got to, you know, move forward and get something. It's like I have to tag it onto something because otherwise it's just, hey, it's great information, but you really are kind of showing that you're not interested in doing it.
Bill, let me cut you off because we got to go to break. Let's continue this thought after the break here on the GetTotalWealth.com radio show. Thanks for listening. Is your money safe from a down market? Hi, I'm Steve Davis of Total Wealth Academy. Were you told it's normal to sometimes lose money in a down market? That's not true. Our clients make money in both the up and down market while creating a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. If you have $50,000 or more of investable assets, you should consider passive real estate investing to protect and grow your money. Visit GetTotalWealth.com and click the free sample class to learn more. That's GetTotalWealth.com. Thank you. Welcome back to the GetTotalWealth.com radio show. I'm on the line with Bill Pilkington, CPA. You can find him online at BentleyAssociates.com. It's Bentley, just like the car, B-E-N-T-L-E-Y, and then Associates, A-S-S-O-C.com. Don't spell out Associates. It's just A-S-S-O-C. If you want to reach out to him by phone, it's 281-875-8181, 281-875-8181. If you're looking for a credible CPA, this guy is strong. So, Bill, let's go back to that thought. Let's move on because I've got another big question. An IRO. Now, an independent real estate owner does not have partners. There's no passive investors. He or she goes in and buys an apartment complex all by themselves, and they make $100,000 that year in cash flow. How is that taxed? You know, they're going to have depreciation to take off of that, but you're talking about doing it all up front or over a 27-year period?
Yeah, so we got a couple of different things. And how it's taxed kind of depends on the structure that they want to do. There's kind of different ways to do it. And so we'll kind of look at things like, hey, what's most beneficial for you? Is the owner single? Is the owner married? Does the owner have another job? You know, what do they want to do? How involved in management decisions? But one of the things most of my clients look at doing, and most of them end up doing it, is a thing that's called cost segregation, which is another way for saying, like, so say you buy a complex for $2.75 million. And so the government says, hey, it's residential. Even though, you know, it's an apartment complex, some people think it's commercial. No, it's, for IRS purposes, it's residential. And if you do nothing, you'll get $100,000 per year of a deduction for 27.5 years. It's the same thing whether you finance it or you pay cash for it or you finance some of it. Same way government says that's called depreciation. We're going to let you recover the cost of your building. We're not talking about the land. We're just talking about the building. Over 27 and a half years. So you get an automatic deduction, $100,000 a year. But then, say you come in and you get like, it's basically like an engineering company, a cost segregation company. They come in, they'll do what's called like an engineered cost segregation study. And they say, hey, I know you spent $2.75 million in this place, but let's kind of break it down. Let's figure out how much were for the windows, how much for the roof, how much the electricity, how much for the HVAC, how much for the parking lots, how much for the shrubs. And they start breaking all these components down, and they're like, yeah, it's not just one homogenous product. You've actually bought all these different things here. And because some of those different parts are not part of the building structure, the IRS allows you to write them off at a faster rate. Could be 3 years, could be 5 years, could be 15. Then on top of that, the IRS says, hey, you know what? The stuff that's less than 20 years, the 3, 5, 15 stuff, you want to take the deduction this year, you can take the deduction this year. So now all of a sudden, instead of taking $100,000 a year for the next 27 years, you might take like $1.5 million this year. You haven't created a new expense, and you haven't gotten, you know, necessarily anything that somebody else can't get. You just accelerated it. So now, say you were going to break even with no depreciation, you might have a $1.5 million loss. Now, somebody might go, oh, my gosh, I lost all this money. I didn't lose all this money. We're just taking the deduction this year. What you give up, though, is then for the next 26 years, you might only get $50,000 a year of depreciation because you scraped all the forward years, brought it forward this year, where the property next door to it, exact same property, exact same price, exact same cash flow, they're going to get $100,000 a year flat. So as you start spreading out, you kind of look a little bit longer down the road. It's like, hey, you know, is this a good idea, bad idea? And in the event this IRO is now a real estate professional and is with active participation, there's a couple of very specific tests on what they want to do.
Sure.
But say it's one of the spouses. One spouse works, the other one doesn't. You're getting this massive deduction for tax purposes in today's term, today's dollars. You might be offsetting almost all, could be more, you know, could be most of it, your spouse's income. So you're getting a deduction today for all the depreciation today instead of having to wait for it. Now, it does impact if you sell a couple years down the road. You could have a higher gain. You know, so you want to go in with your eyes wide open. It's not free. You know, nothing's free. You know, death and taxes, the only problem is death doesn't come once a year to review the code. But so you'll go forward, but that may be your plan. Because a lot of my clients are like, hey, I get that, but now it's the time value of money. I take my deduction today. I save my taxes today. I get all this cash flow, and I'm not paying current income taxes on it today. I get it. I'm going to pay more tax in 5 years. But let me tell you my plan. I'm an IRO. I'm going real estate. 5 years from now, when I sell this thing, I'm buying one, maybe two more. And so you get to keep deferring the tax liability. It's not the same thing as tax-free. Like tax-free, that means you'll never, ever, ever, ever pay tax on it. It's like a one-way street that sometimes you'll be able to get out of the taxes, but it's Texas community property. If one of the spouses dies, but I mean, well, one out of every one people die, but you know, yeah. Hopefully it's 100 years from now. But at some point, when they do, depending on if they had like some type of prenup or if someone was in excess, I mean, your typical married couple in Texas, they might have like $11 million that they can step up, pass on to the other spouse, and all that deferred depreciation, all that stuff that you thought you were going to pay tax on, it's like you just hit the reset button and you start all over again. You get to do new depreciation, you get new deductions, and so you're not having to necessarily worry about it. But again, it kind of comes down to the time value of money. And this is not, I mean, anything, you know, super secret. It's, you know, it's well-established tax code that can do it. And it's just that some people, they just don't know about it. I mean, if it's unfortunate, they'll go off and do it themselves. And when you talk to them later, it's, you know, kind of like the VA moment. Like, wow, I could have had a V8. And it's like, that being said, imagine somebody's gone 2-3 years, they've owned this complex, and they never did their cost segregation. Hey, it's not over. You still have the chance to do it. You just kind of get, you play like a little bit of a catch-up. If you do it in your third year, you're still eligible to do it. It may not be quite as large of a deduction as if you did it from the beginning, but gone a couple of years and hasn't done it, it's okay. You know, it's the door's not shut. You still have the opportunity. What they say is you can only do it once. You can't do it on the same property over and over and over. But what you can do, actually, if you get like one property and then you sell it, or you do a 1031 into another one, then you can do it again on the new property. It's just the laws allow you to do it once per property. And with an IRO, all the deductions go to the IRO. If it's going to be a syndicated deal, then it's kind of like a spaghetti colander. You pour water into it and everything flows out. Well, right. 5% of the holes out of that colander are yours. You're getting 5% of the benefit, you know, and so on and so forth.
Okay. Next question.
Back to the cash flow part. They're basically getting that cash flow, and because they're the IRO, they probably don't want to set up a separate management company, because the nice part about managing your own real estate is you avoid self-employment tax. So you're not paying Social Security and Medicare tax when you have your own property. If you're managing somebody else's property, I usually recommend, hey, now you do want to get a management company because it's not 100% you. And when I say you, you're married, I mean husband and wife together. But I mean, if you start doing stuff with kids, brothers, sisters, cousins, it's much better. Hey, let's establish this up front. Here's my management company. Here's the fee my management company earns. Here's the property. Here's this property. And you kind of delineate. But if it's like husband and wife, you know, it's, you know, all just one big pool. And why pay Social Security and Medicare tax on something you don't have to? It's like, oh, yeah, let me just give the government an extra 15%, you know?
Yeah.
I guess there's some altruists out there that want to do it. I'm just not one of them.
So let's say, how does the depreciation, let's say you do this cost segregation, accelerate your depreciation, you have $100,000 in cash flow, but you have a $1.5 million depreciation, where's that other $1.4 go?
So what's happening is you probably either from either you put the money down, you're reducing your basis in the property. So you buy this building for 2.75, and now, and so one day, either now or over the next 27 and a half years, or a combination really thereof, you're going to recover that expenditure, whether it be from a loan or you paid cash for it for the property. The difference, and then the depreciation, every year as you're taking that expense, so like say it's 100,000, 2.75 after 1 year of 100,000 depreciation, 2.65. Okay, another year, 2.55. Another year, 2.45. And what I mean by that, the basis is, so if you sell it, what's my gain going to be? Well, it's for the amount you sell for more than your basis. So if you go 3 years at 100,000 a year depreciation, and you only sell it for your original 2.75, what you sold it for to begin with, you still have a $300,000 gain. Somebody might go, wait a minute, I sold it for what I paid for it. Yeah, but you got that deduction, that $100,000 a year deduction that you were taking. You take a $1.5 million deduction the first year, and then if you sell it the next year, you're going to have a $1.5 million gain. It's not good or bad. It's just, okay, hey, you got the deduction, and it's kind of like peeling an onion. The IRS says, hey, you peel it off. Well, when you sell it, you start putting the layers back on. If you sell it for more than you originally paid for it, that's the amount that they start calling capital gain. And if you've owned it for more than a year, they'll call it a long-term capital gain. So whatever you put in, if we take out the depreciation, take expenses for a second, the amount that you sell it for that's more than your original purchase, that's the stuff that could be preferential. For some people, it could be 0% tax, some could be 15, some could be 20. But so what's happening is if you get this large loss, that loss is going to stay on your tax return. Maybe you get the full benefit the first year. Maybe it's more loss than all your income. So it continues to carry forward as long as you're alive. And so we keep track of it. And so your cash flow is coming in, but the cash flow is really just kind of eating up against the loss. Let me cut you off again, Bill,
because we got to go to our next break.
Oh, yeah.
Please hold on, and we'll talk more after the break here on the GetTotalWealth.com radio show. You're listening to AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Steve Davis of Total Wealth Academy. Many people think they need hundreds of thousands of dollars to successfully invest in real estate. That's simply not true. If you have $50,000 or more in investable assets, you can begin passive investing today. No worrying with contractors or tenants, and you get all the benefits of real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free 90-minute sample class live or online. Visit GetTotalWealth.com and click the free sample class button. That's GetTotalWealth.com. Thank you.
Radio show. I am your host, Steve Davis. On the line with me today is Bill Pilkington, CPA. You can find him online at BentleyAssociates.com. He's shortened associates. It's Bentley, like the car, EY, Associates, ASSOC.com. BentleyAssociates.com. His phone number, because I'm cutting him off. In other words, he's got a lot more information that you may need. So his phone number is 281-875-8181. Give him a call and tell him what your position is, what your situation is, and he can finish these thoughts. Because I've got another question for you, Bill. It's November of last year, and I invest $100,000 into a passive self-storage. In September of this year, I got a check for $180,000. The deal is sold. So it's less than a year. I've gotten an 80% rate of return. How is that taxed?
So with balloons and celebrations.
Yeah, believe me, we did. We did. That's a real deal, by the way. That's our most recent deal.
Answer, yes, there'll be tax, but also taxes are still less than 100%.
Absolutely.
The way the government would treat it, on your initial $100,000 to purchase, there was going to be some kind of depreciation on that. Even if, like, say, the property broke even for tax purposes, they took some kind of depreciation. Or, I'm sorry, let me take a step back. Hopefully the CPA did. I've had a couple CPAs that I've heard people say, they told, nah, don't take the depreciation. You just got to pay more taxes on it when you sell it. Oh, my God, run as far as you can from something like that.
That
because
is crazy.
The IRS has something that's called allowed or allowable. Whether you take the depreciation or not, they're going to tax you on the gain. Let's just make up a number, $10,000. So you put 100 in your pro rata share, your depreciation was 10,000. So your 100 drops to 90,000, and you sell for 180. You're going to have a $90,000 gain. It's like an ordinary tax because it's less than 1 year. Depending on your total income bracket, it could be 10, 12%. It could be 37%. If you do nothing other than just keep your money, expect to pay taxes on that money. It's, you know, so your original 100, it's going to be slightly reduced for the expense for depreciation. But then again, also remember, the reason you got that expense for depreciation, you took that as a tax deduction somewhere on the return. So you did get the benefit of that. If, however, if you can, because it was passively invested, it's considered a passive gain. Passive gains and passive losses will offset each other. So in a vacuum, if that's your only deal, you've got tax on it. But if you kind of zoom out for a sec, maybe you had three or four, a couple other multifamily deals that had been building up those losses. Maybe you had bought into something back in 2019 and it had done the cost segregation. And so you've got a big passive loss carryover. Well, that passive loss carryover can be used to offset that gain on the self-storage. So it's now, this is when you start to see the benefit. It's kind of like on the working out. You don't see it on the first day, but after several months of working out, you start to see the benefit of it. You then get to use the benefit of another passive deal to offset the taxes, offset the income, offset the gain of the current tax deal. But maybe you're one of those that, you know, I didn't buy this my first deal. What do I do? Well, if you can go ahead and get into another deal, or you can be an IRO, you get into some other type of investment, passive, before the end of the year 2021, you don't have to have the losses first. You can have the losses. What the IRS looks at is, hey, what did you do during the calendar year? Okay, well, in September, I had this large gain, but then by December, when I invested into this new property, it had a large loss. Okay, net the two of them together. Separate deals can't bring you into a negative, but they can bring you down to zero. And so now you're looking at a zero net gain, because whatever you gained on one, you're recognizing as a loss on the other. And then you're able to move on. And so it becomes beneficial many times to own more than one investment, because you never know when one's going to sell. It's like you kind of always want to have a plan B, you know, because it's great. I mean, it's, you know, to make the money. But then again, what if, just like that situation, hey, the price was right, we went ahead and sold. Well, if everything you've done is just on this one deal and you're expecting the cash flow forever, sometimes it's kind of like, hey, well, what's your plan B? You know, hey, I can help you with the tax stuff, but what do you want to do? Have you looked into any other deals? You know, or were you just, you know, waiting to see? So we've got even now a little bit of time, but you would want to have something to buy into something, and that something has to close before December 31st to get the benefit, because we're talking an entire calendar year of 2021.
Understood. So if she, which she's doing, she's getting into an apartment complex with that money. So the depreciation, correct, from that, okay, that's a great answer, and I hope she's listening.
It doesn't always happen, but my experience has been that new deal this person gets into gets a cost segregation study. And again, the nice thing is you don't have to determine the cost seg before you buy. You don't have to determine the day you do buy. You do have to determine it before you file the tax return.
Right, and so that gives you plenty of time.
2021 returns for something taxed as a partnership will be due by March 15th of next year. So you've got between now and March 15th to think about it. And it's like, wait a minute, okay, so if I do this cost seg, and the cost seg companies will usually tell you, hey, here's an estimate of what we can give you. It looks like based on your property purchase, you'll be able to take this large of a deduction. And the really good ones also will tell you, in the event of any type of IRS audit, we stand behind it. You paid our fee to do the cost seg. Any IRS audit, we defend it 100%. And so now, as you know, you either as a lead or as a passive, you've got some peace of mind going, hey, this thing's going to pass muster. You know, well, it's obvious you never have to go to IRS, but should it happen, you're covered.
That's powerful.
We don't do, but I partner up with really smart people to do. I mean, like my whole work thing is I partnered up. My partner is extremely smart. He's awesome. I'm blessed to have him, and it allows me to do stuff like this, like talk to people. And
is that Gregory Bratcher?
Yes. Yeah, Greg's awesome. Yeah. I'm very lucky to have him as a partner. He's in the office. He's actually the one, all of my returns, he'll be the one that finally signs a return. I've got a team of awesome managers. I mean, I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I was smart enough to know to team up with others that are, because having them do all the real work gives me the ability to go out and talk with the clients. I like to explain stuff, kind of break it down. I mean, I sometimes say I'm bilingual. I speak, you know, accounting and English.
It is a different language.
And so I love it when I explain it to somebody and I can see that little click, like, oh yeah, I get it. You know, okay, yeah, no, I understand that. And then I've got the team of people back at the office that they'll be there, they'll document everything, they make sure all the paperwork gets done right. Again, I mean, they say, you know, do what you love and never work a day in your life. It's like, I love my entire team. I'm like so lucky to have all the people I have back at my office. You know, if they're listening, thank you all.
That's awesome. Okay, then the last question is going to be just a simple one. I make 80 grand a month. Pretend like I'm your client. I'm making 80 grand a month in passive income, and I want to sell all my properties. I'm, you know, 84, I've got cancer. That's a bad idea, isn't it? You really want to pass these things on. I guess it's not as much a question as it is. I just want to get your opinion on that, because it's, you step up, explain that again, stepping up the basis.
Okay. So it is possible. You know, everybody's a little bit unique. Everybody, you know, what's in their situation is different. But generally speaking, if the person wants to sell, it might be kind of one of those, well, why?
Yeah.
Because if they have cancer, that they're going to die, and it's a sad situation, but it's sometimes we can kind of plan, and most people, and I've had similar situations to this, they don't want to create any additional burden to their heirs. Could be their wife, could be their kids, could be their grandkids. The way the tax law works, so absent the money was in some trust or a corporation or IRA, we could do a whole other show why those are not the worst thing in the world, but they're not always the best. But then again, for some people, they might be the best. But generally speaking, so they own it as an individual or they own it through a partnership. The person who inherits it, maybe they've had these investments for a long time. Maybe they invested over time $1 million and they've received all their $1 million back, plus like they're getting the $80,000 a month cash flow, that if they sell, whatever they sell for could be 100% taxable. If, however, it passes through to an heir, including the spouse, through inheritance, the one dying right now is a little over $11 million. Depending on how much total stuff the person has, they might be able to pass $11 million onto their heirs tax-free. And actually, it's slightly better than tax-free. Say they own all their assets or real estate, just for in simple case purpose. They own $10 million worth of real estate. Not only do they pass it tax-free, the person who inherits it, they get to start depreciating it all over again.
That's crazy.
They get to hit the reset button, and now they get to start taking that depreciation deduction as if to the IRS. It's like, oh, they wrote a check.
Brand new
they
deal.
Bought $10 million
well,
of real estate.
We are at the end of the show. Thank you so much for coming on today. Anybody who wants to ask further questions of Bill, call 281-875-8181. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great rest of your day and a great weekend. Take care.
You've been listening to the GetTotalWealth.com radio show. Please remember that this show is for entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investing advice. Always get a professional opinion before making any investment decision. To find out about coaching and consulting at Total Wealth Academy, visit GetTotalWealth.com and attend one of our free sample classes on real estate investing. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your day.